This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, May 15th, 2013. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poetry for weddings. My favorite dirty joke has a repeated line in it. It is spring. It is France. Love is in the air. I can't tell you the joke, though. This is not that kind of program. But it is spring. Love is in the air, or at least matrimony is, May and June being the traditional wedding season. The burning question for many engaged couples is, should someone read a poem at our wedding? And what poem? Here to help us is Ruth Graham, a journalist in New Hampshire who writes frequently for our website, poetryfoundation.org, including a piece that just went up about wedding poetry. Now, Ruth, you got married just a few years ago, and you went through the process of choosing a wedding poem. And without telling us yet what you ultimately settled on, tell us a bit about the process and its complications.
Sure. Well, I got married in June of 2011, so coming up on 2 years ago. And my fiancé and I knew that we wanted to have readings in the wedding. It's sort of a standard at this point to read a poem in a wedding, at least one. So I started reading around. I picked books off my own bookshelf, and I went online there, and there are a tremendous number of websites that will advise you on this matter.
Including the Poetry Foundation, I think.
Including the Poetry Foundation, the perfect place to start. but it was tricky. There's a lot of bad advice out there. There's this wildly popular reading. It's usually called the Apache Wedding Blessing that turns out to not be an Apache wedding blessing at all, but to come from a Western, a 1950 movie called Broken Arrow.
Oh, really?
But it has this, it goes, you've probably heard it, now you will feel no rain, for each of you will be shelter for the other. So it has the right feel, but it's a complete fraud.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there are other selections that just come up over and over and over and then start to feel cliche, once you've read a couple of dozen of these lists.
Talk to us about the what you call the originality problem when it comes to choosing a poem for one's wedding.
Well, if you're getting married in the 21st century, you are expected, everyone wants their wedding to be personal. That's paradoxically sort of a universal desire.
Mm-hmm.
And the other problem is that, of course, not everyone has a personal relationship with poetry or a huge trove of poems that they can reach back to. But really for anyone, even someone who loves poetry, it's just tough to find something that's perfectly original but also perfectly appropriate. And a wedding poem has to perform all these functions. It can't be too abstract or too strange. It has to appeal to your grandmother. It has to appeal to your friends. It has to speak to the sort of history, the foundation of the relationship that you're sealing on the wedding day. It has to speak to being in that particular moment in this incredibly significant day. And then, of course, a wedding is all about looking forward as well. It should sort of sum all of that up. And it's a tall order.
And it can't be too sexy.
Exactly. Some people end up writing their own wedding poetry, which is a very bold move.
Yes.
I tread carefully there, but some people sort of veer into that when they're writing their own works.
And if you're Robert Frost and your daughter's getting married, you have my permission to go ahead and write a poem, because he did write one for his daughter's wedding, and it's a very popular wedding poem. It's a sonnet called The Master's Speed. It's a very peculiar title. I'm going to get you to read that for us, but is there anything that you can say to introduce it?
Well, yeah, you just did it well. It was his daughter's wedding in 1926, and it's about how love gives us the power to stand still, I guess, is how to sum it up. And it's so popular that when I Googled it just to print it out this morning, when you Google the Master Speed, the first thing that comes up is a wedding website. So it has now become also part of the canon, but it deserves it. It's really beautiful.
Well, this is one you rejected, but let's hear it anyway. Can you give it a read?
Sure. No speed of wind or water rushing by, but you have speed far greater. You can climb back up a stream of radiance to the sky and back through history up the stream of time. And you were given this swiftness not for haste, nor chiefly that you may go where you will, but in the rush of everything to waste, that you may have the power of standing still off any still or moving thing you say. Two such as you with master speed cannot be parted nor be swept away from one another. Once you are agreed that life is only life forevermore, together wing to wing and oar to oar.
Mm-hmm. There's no hint in the first nine lines of that poem that this is about marriage. It comes in the... But what is the power of standing still? What do you make of that?
That's both the burden and the freedom of marriage, right? To stand still, to stand together side by side. You're not rushing ahead.
Not straying, right?
Exactly, right. So there's a sort of peace that can be a little bit of a frightening thought, too.
For most guys in their 20s, it's terrifying.
Exactly, right. It is terrifying. Life is only life forevermore, together wing to wing and oar to oar.
Yeah, and it ends with a very conventional metaphor of life as a journey.
Mm-hmm.
Together wing to wing and oar to oar, a very romantic image. And you rejected this poem. Is it because it was so popular?
It kind of is. I mean, I hate to admit that because you're never going to achieve perfect originality. But it was. I just sort of saw it on one too many lists. And it had some personal significance. I mean, Robert Frost has a connection to New Hampshire, where my husband and I live now. And so it worked on that personal level. But at a certain point, I just saw it on one too many lists.
I understand. My parents got married in the 1950s. And my mother reports that no one read any poems at their wedding. It just wasn't done back in those days. When did this whole poetry reading at weddings get started?
There's a long history of wedding poetry, but really until the 60s, as these countercultural couples wanted to get married. So, they're not completely countercultural. They still wanted to have a wedding, but they want to do it in the backyard. They want to write their own vows. They want to make it a more personal occasion.
So one of the interesting things you talk about in your piece is how certain poems and poets have come into fashion, like E.E. Cummings is super fashionable today. What was in fashion in the 1960s?
Well, the first wildly popular poet of the 60s, at least for weddings, was Khalil Gibran. He was
the prophet,
wildly popular,
right?
Not just for weddings. Yes, the prophet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So that's a collection of published in 1923. So it wasn't new then. It wasn't even close to new. But it sort of spoke to the spirit of the 60s. The selection from the prophet that was so popular in weddings goes, "Love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your souls." So in some ways, it's the opposite of that Frost poem, where rootedness and togetherness is the blessing. And in this case, Gibran is saying, don't be too rooted, don't make this bond. And I think it's for couples who still wanted to get married, but wanted a different sort of bond of love than their parents had.
Okay, so what poem did you finally end up choosing for your wedding?
The poem that we finally chose is called Language Lesson 1976 by Heather McHugh, I think first published in a 1981 collection called A World of Difference.
Uh-huh. Before I get you to read this one, is there anything you want to say about it to set it up just a little bit?
Sure. It's one that really benefits from reading a few times. I'll just read it once, but I'd recommend sort of looking it up and reading it in print because it's a little bit of a puzzle. There's a little sort of language puzzle to translate that transforms the poem into a love poem that doesn't necessarily sound that way at first listen.
Well, let's transport us back to your wedding a couple years ago.
And great.
Why don't you read Language Lesson 1976 by Heather McHugh.
When Americans say a man takes liberties, they mean he's gone too far. In Philadelphia today, I saw a kid on a leash look momward and announce his fondest wish, one bicentennial burger, hold the relish. Hold is forget in American. On the courts of Philadelphia, the rich prepare to serve, to fault. The language is a game as well, in which love can mean nothing. Double talk mean lie. I'm saying double talk with me. I'm saying go so far the customs are untold. Make nothing without words, and let me be the one you never hold.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Heather McHugh. Playful with language, funny throughout. It's curious that a poem analyzing the curiosities of Americanisms has such a romantic punch to it. What is she saying in this poem about language and love?
First, I guess I'll just go she says, hold is forget in American. Let me be the one you never hold. So at the end, this line that sounds like its exact opposite, that sounds like a rejection is in fact an embrace, which makes it a little bit perverse to read that at a wedding, right? Where you're reading vows that are meant to be taken. It's probably the most literal language we use in our lives, but
yeah.
We said the vows too.
So when you read that poem, or you didn't read the poem, you had a friend read it, right?
Yes, we had an old friend read it.
And how did it go over?
Well, you know, no one's going to say they hate it, right? Everyone's nice to you. If they're not going to be nice to you on your wedding day, when are they going to be nice to you? But I think it went over well. And we had it printed in the program, too, so it wouldn't sort of speed by too fast. And people who had it, who wanted to, could sort of reread it and puzzle it out. And I should add, too, it's sort of the right length.
Yeah, it's not too long. That's very important for wedding poems, right?
It is. It is. It's crucial. Everyone's outside. The sun's beating down.
Yeah.
People are ready to have some champagne. And
those last lines, make nothing without words and let me be the one you never hold. I think a lot of people in the wedding will go, huh?
I know. I know. That's, it requires a little bit of detective work.
Ruth Graham's article on wedding poetry is on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you can browse through hundreds and thousands of other possible wedding poems. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.